And welcome to another episode of Tea Time. How are you, Sam?
I'm good. It's been a while.
It has been a while since we last recorded, and we're sorry about that. We haven't had an episode out in a couple of weeks, but that's because I was on annual leave, Sam was on annual leave, so we had some time off. Now we're back.
We are back,
We
ready
are
to go.
back. Yeah, what are we drinking today?
You know what? Today I'm not having anything. The sun is out. I'm not having anything at the moment, but maybe later. You know what I think I'll have in the sunshine is Capella. Again, no ad here. But we like a bit of Capella, the apple and elderflower Capella.
What's Capella? Ah, elderflower.
Yeah, apple and elderflower, the suppressed
Apple.
apple juice, suppressed apple juice, but the one with elderflower, chef's kiss.
I think I tried that one before and it's good. Yeah. I'm going with my iced coffee today because it's that time of the year where I can have iced coffee, so
Don't get that cold coffee. Anyway,
you don't like hot coffee?
no.
No. No, I do enjoy it in the spring, summertime. It is nice. In the afternoon, I would start my day with hot coffee, but never with an iced coffee. We're recording from the comfort of our homes today. I'm
If you
trying
hear
to
any
enjoy.
background noise.
If you hear any, yeah, random neighbors shouting or my cat meowing in the background. So,
Or teenage girls interrupting. It's
the cup with English breakfast tea, not two sugars.
No milk, no sugar.
The views and opinions expressed in this podcast are solely those of myself and Som, and do not necessarily reflect the views or opinions of the Royal Marsden Hospital.
Okay, so what are we talking about today?
Today we are talking about the good immigrant. What makes a good immigrant?
Yeah, I'm gonna go ahead and just ask you your opinion. What do you think? Who do you think is a good immigrant, or what constitutes a good immigrant?
Okay. So first of all, why do we call them immigrants? Maybe we should call them the good expat, and
Yeah.
not necessarily the good, especially if you come from like a former British colony. Then are you an immigrant or are you an expat? Because you could be said that you were coming, you're coming home,
Yeah.
Anyway, that's a different
No,
conversation
it's a
for a
good way
different
to
day.
start. Yeah, I think it's good to start with defining the words, you know, like why do we call them migrants or immigrants? And when British people go abroad, we call them expats. Like I worked with British people in Lebanon and we called them the expats, you know, in the company. And expat, I think, holds a more positive connotation that these are experienced people bringing in, you know, their expertise and they're an added value. However, immigrant, I think over the years started holding more a negative connotation because of, you know, obviously all the portrayals and the political agendas around immigration.
Yeah, taking all the
So,
jobs, taking all the houses, using up all the
yeah.
healthcare.
So those are not the good immigrants, I'm guessing.
Wow, I think for some people they would just describe that as all immigrants, because when you come here, the country's full, is what they'll tell you. So, regardless of what your contribution is, it doesn't matter because you've taken my job, you've taken my healthcare. So now the NHS is bursting to its seams because they are catering to you, and you will be seen before I will. I can't see my dentist because all of you immigrants have come here. It's things like that. So can we ever win? Can you come from another country and be deemed as good? That is the question.
So I think, you know, from what you're saying, in general, we consider a good immigrant who's someone who comes here and they contribute something, right? Like mainly maybe skilled worker who comes in on visas, you know, similar to myself, similar to you, maybe at some point. So it is a good immigrant, someone basically who's contributing something, who's helping out, who are doing a certain job. But you're saying that even with that, sometimes it's not enough. Like, even if you're contributing, it's not enough. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, definitely. Because we've all heard of people in the workplace, who have come from other areas, especially in the public sector, and people don't want to see them because why are you in my country? I want to see the white person who is doing your job. I do not want to see the black or brown person doing this job because you are not competent. So you've come, you've taken this job, and you're automatically not good enough to do this job. Leave it to the white person who's obviously more skilled, more qualified than you, to do this job. That's why I say, can you ever win? Because you can come and people will still trying to undermine the skills, still try to rubbish your contribution because they deem you not good enough.
But do you think that's the kind of like the more common experience that if you're a contributing immigrant to have a negative, or that's the exception?
I think I think it's getting more common, to be honest with you. When you look at recent politics, the rise of the far right and things like that, how can we say that we are being welcomed to contribute to society when these parties are making such a resurgence? Reform UK, whatever, that's now they predict that that party is being larger and larger. Southern faction. We're not supposed to talk about politics, are we?
No,
No.
we can. We can stop. I mean, you can't. I think you can't separate the topic of immigration from politics because it's like heavily influenced by political agendas, especially within the UK and within the different, parties that have probably over the last decade or more used immigration as, one of their main hot topics in their agendas in the country. So no, I think, yeah, maybe we don't necessarily need to like go in full into details with politics, but we cannot shy away from it with this topic because it has been,
Well, because it does come hand in hand.
it does come hand in hand, and it's very influenced like by what they want you to kind of believe, because like a lot of immigrants or asylum seekers who are coming in, if they're coming from a brown or black background, they want you to see that as the bad. That's the bad immigrant who's coming to steal your job, who's coming to take your money, who's coming to abuse the NHS and live off benefits and not contribute to society. But at the same time, other asylum seekers, because politically they want you to feel, that this is a good asylum seeker, like the Ukraine refugee crisis, like people were open and welcoming, right? Like the UK
Oh yes,
created a
they were
whole
the
scheme,
great immigrants.
and even though they are still refugees, they're still asylum seekers, they're not coming on a skilled worker visa, so they're not necessarily going to be contributing to society. But because politically, there was a big, like this is an ally of the UK that we want to be welcoming, there was a whole drive within the UK to
Yes,
create
there
the
was.
Homes for Ukraine sponsorship scheme, I think it was called, to help you, sponsor Ukrainian refugees come to the country, and
Yes,
you get
people
paid
opening up
for
their
that. So
houses.
yeah, you get paid for that, I think around like 300 or £350 per month for it. So, and that's great, and we're not saying like that wasn't a good initiative, but I'm just saying like how politics heavily influenced what you see as a good immigrant asylum seeker and a bad immigrant asylum seeker, right? Like it's, so politics definitely play a big role in this.
Going back to the subject of people coming from Ukraine, so when you think of good immigrants and bad immigrants, okay, maybe not so good immigrants. One of the things that people say is people come to this country, they've stayed here for 20 years, etc., and they can't speak English. I wonder if this is also thought of our like sort of Eastern European sort of immigrants, sorry, if the fact that they can't speak English is held against them. I might be a bit controversial here, but I think if you're going to move to a country and you're going to be there for a number of years, then you should make an effort to learn the language of the country that you have chosen to go and be a part of, because it's not uncommon to come across people who have lived here for a number of years, 10 years, and can barely speak any English. You know, and when we go to other countries, like, you know, I've been on holiday in, say, like Italy and places like that, you can't go and speak to the Italians in English. They will tell you, this is Italy. You need to speak English. You need to speak Italian to me, you know. So how do we feel about this? You know,
Well,
youths
I
are.
agree with you, yeah, that it is you need to put some effort to try to integrate in society, whatever you know, if
Definitely.
you're deciding to move into a country, you know, you need to try and integrate. You know, sometimes there are barriers to that. But I would say
What would be the
also maybe,
barriers?
like for example, with the topic of learning a new language, especially as an adult, is not an easy thing. So like if someone moved here, maybe if you move here at a younger age, or maybe more easier for you to learn a new language, learning a new language at an older age, and if you already don't come maybe from a kind of like a good education foundation, or you're not very well educated, and you might not be able to learn second language as easily. So even though like maybe you have
So
the
I would
intention,
argue,
you try,
I'm
but
going
you
to play
might not
devil's
be
advocate
able.
here. I'm going to play devil's advocate here. I would argue, why have you come as an older person to this country if your intention is not to speak English? Because what contribution could you possibly have come to make if you were going to be in England and you're contributing? A contribution would be seen as a job, wouldn't it? Let me not
Oh,
say
what if
England,
you're an
I want
asylum seeker? What if you're an asylum seeker? You didn't
to.
come here by
Okay, fair
choice, you know?
enough. I didn't think of that. I
Yeah.
did not think of that one. But again, if you're going to if you've come somewhere as an asylum seeker, you're going to need to navigate services. Yeah. Because if you then need healthcare, if you then need to put your children in school, et cetera, it is going to be of benefit to you to try and learn the language as quickly as possible. Because can you imagine being in a healthcare system where people are going to want to do procedures and give you things, et cetera, and you have no clue what's going on. So you need to view the learning of a language as an empowerment tool on your part because it's going to help you. Do you need to prioritize that? No?
Yeah, I totally agree, but I'm just saying, what if you really have, like, I don't know, disability, learning disabilities, and you just cannot grasp a new language, and it's really difficult for you know, even though you have the full intention that I want to learn, I want to integrate, but you just physically, it's really difficult, and you might learn a few words here and there to say hello, goodbye, maybe, and greetings, but you know. Some people maybe just struggle with that. And I think we owe it to them, in the example you gave in healthcare, to provide them with what are they called? Translation services, or the interpreters, right? So that's why we have those systems in place. We have interpreters to come in, advocate for patients, and help them with that. I do agree that, you know, you will need to put some effort to try and integrate, to learn the language so you can navigate services, so you can access services. But I'm just yeah, I'm just conscious that there could be barriers to that. There could be different, you know, you might not be able to afford getting English lessons. I don't know. You know, how do you learn English if you cannot afford it, or you don't have access to proper training. I don't
I
know. I
would
just think
say
that.
though that you have access to people. You see
Yeah.
what I mean? It can be little things like going to the shop and practicing, you know, can I'd like a newspaper, please. Little things like that. Like how when you are on holiday, the locals appreciate the fact that you have tried and you would build from that.
So going back to our topic, would you say a good immigrant is someone who had put the effort, learned some English, tried to integrate? A bad immigrant, someone who did not, who just decided to stick to the language, live in a community that is maybe homogeneous, where like everyone from their background live, so they can easily just keep using their language. Are we saying that these homogeneous communities are bad example, or like an example of bad immigration?
Think it's not, I wouldn't call it bad immigration, but I think what it does is not help with acceptance. You see what I mean? If you just stay exclusively within your community and just speak your language within your people, etc., this is where people will sort of point a finger and say, well, why don't you go back home? because you've come here and you only want to be around your people and you only speak your language and you haven't made any attempt to sort of be part of our community, that's where it might be a little bit difficult. But I can also appreciate that when you arrive in a new area, you go to where your people are. You know, the majority of people will go somewhere because they've got a relative there or they've got a friend there, or, you know, they've heard there are others from their sort of ethnic group that is there. So it's easy to fall into those areas. Just like when our white counterparts go to places like Spain, you know, there will be parts in Spain that are very British because a lot of British people have gone to settle there. So it happened, we all do it, you know, not just the global majority people, but also our white counterparts as well go to places and congregate. So we're all bad.
But like, in that sense, if someone's coming to the UK, wouldn't you agree that there are some areas that even if I want to integrate to the max and I want to go and live in an area that is, I don't know, it's very known to be non-diverse, I might not be welcome there, right? There are areas that are not welcome to diversity.
Good for you if you want to go there. But me, if I hear I'm not welcomed, I'm not coming. I am not coming.
But then how am I going to force to integrate, you know?
There are certain things that are not worth it.
We go back to, it's like, it's doomed if we do and it's doomed if we don't. It's doomed if we stick to our communities and live in an area that is homogeneous. And then we're doomed if we try and go and like live somewhere that is not as welcoming and you'll always be the kind of the other. And you might not even be like,
you know what? Some people rented, are built for that life. Some people are built for that life. I am not one of them. Some people are quite happy to go to areas where it might not be outright, you know, people who are very explicit with their racism. But it might just be subtle racism. And some people are quite happy to go and fight that fight. Me, no thank you. No thank you. I am not going to fight that fight.
You don't want to go live in Richmond or...
No, I think Richmond is different. I think I would go and live in Richmond because Richmond is still within London. So I wouldn't feel it as much. Mm. But if I take myself to a little village somewhere, I am definitely going to feel it more. So they might both be very white areas. But the fact that I'm in London, for me, would lessen. I wouldn't feel it as much, is what I think. I haven't gone to these areas.
So, yeah. I mean... if I take from my experience, because when I came, I there is not a known area that is like, I don't know, like a Lebanese community populating in London. We know there is the Edgware Road and that area that is very, that there is a big Arab population in general. Yeah. But I what I'm saying is that I felt like, oh, I can be wherever. So I was, that's why I've lived in different areas. But
No, I cannot be wherever. There are certain places you will not find me.
But what was interesting when I first moved is like people tell you to avoid certain areas, and like Croydon was one of the first areas I've been told to avoid.
They told you to avoid where?
Croydon.
Oh, who told you that?
I mean, I wouldn't name names and I cannot remember now. But yeah, like you're told, oh, like, you know, this area could be, you know, I don't know, not the safest. And then, and like, you know, I didn't know why was that? Why was that area considered that, you know?
For those who are listening, I live in Croydon. This is why I'm finding this very controversial. But in Croydon's defense, people will not tell you to come to Croydon because of racism. Croydon is
Very, very... That's what I learned, area. Yeah. So that's when I dug into it.
But they will say, oh, don't go to Croydon because you'll get stabbed. I've lived in Croydon for many years and have never been stabbed, you know. So I think lots of areas within London have a bad rep, but I would still choose those areas over going to a predominantly white little village somewhere. I will choose the, you know, you might get stabbed walking down the street, because I feel like that is more unlikely to happen. And I'll probably be happier in that area than being in an area where I am the only black person. Because in the area that I might be stabbed, I know it's probably going to be a little bit more diverse than the area where You know, they think that I might not be stabbed, but I might suffer a little bit more. You know, that there's
No, I totally agree. You know, like I've definitely been to like maybe some areas in the UK where you feel you're the diverse, like you're the diverse person there. You know, like because it's a heavily populated, you know, small area or small village, or like a very homogeneously white community, and then you stand out there, and you don't want to stand out, right? Like you don't want to have all eyes on you all the time. So yeah, I'm bringing this back to to our
the good
topic.
immigrant.
Integrate. I think the good immigrant we would want the good immigrant to try and integrate, basically. But integration is a maybe difficult thing, or
Yes,
it has
because who
its
is it? We
challenges.
were talking to somebody, weren't we, at work about this, who said that when she came, she's from an Irish community, and she didn't want to be just around Irish people. She wanted to experience other communities and other cultures. But what she found, it was quite hard, it was quite difficult to get access to those cultures, you know, if there isn't a point. So if you are, say, a parent, it's a little bit easier because of the school playground, you know, play dates and things like that. So it's easier to get access to other communities that way. But if you don't have that, you know, through children, how do you then integrate into these other communities? So are we saying that these communities are shutting people out? Should we, as specific communities, welcome everybody into our communities? How do we feel about that? So I'm trying to integrate. I'm trying to have a diverse group of friends. But is it easy to get a diverse group of friends? Is it easy for, you know, I'm an Irish immigrant, you're a Jamaican immigrant, you're an Arab immigrant, whatever.
Where are we gonna meet? Yeah.
Yeah, how are we letting people into our communities? Because we're all immigrants here, or expats, whatever you want to call us. But are we also discriminating against others joining us?
I think this further highlights the
community?
issue with homogeneous communities just, you know, sticking to each other. Because then, yeah, exactly. How do you welcome other people? How do people meet each other? And I don't know, but I think it's that you're only venues would be like work, you know, getting to know people from different backgrounds with different cultures, or if you want to attend certain events arranged by these communities. But then you will probably stand out if you go to like an event, I don't know, arranged by the Jamaican community, and you arrive there as an Irish person. And
but
yeah,
I think
yeah,
some people would argue that some communities are more welcoming than others.
I think some communities, or and especially, you know, like migrant communities, are generally more welcoming than people think they are. And I'm sure we can think of different communities that they would be more than happy to welcome you to their events, to share their food with you. And because it's something that, you know, that we appreciate.
Can I add another spice to the mix?
Mm-hmm.
So if we take ourselves to another country, should we expect our cultures and customs to be automatically be allowed and adopted in those countries? Do you know what I mean? If I go to Dubai, you know, there are certain things that are an absolute no-no. And I should, it might be something that, you know, where I've come from, it's totally acceptable. And I've now shown up in Dubai. Should I demand that, because, you know, these are my cultural norms and practices, that the people in Dubai allow me to do these things because this is what we do where I come from?
What I would say, which is from my opinion, basically, I think it's impossible and not fair for like a state or a country to accommodate for the, you know, like the beliefs or the norms of every single person that comes into that country. So that's just not achievable. However, if there is a significant number of people in that country who comes from a similar background and share similar cultural values or beliefs or norms, then I think that's when, yes, you are right to demand that this to be acknowledged. So in the sense, in Britain now, you know, the Muslim population is what, at 6.5% or 7%. That is a significant proportion of people that it would be reasonable to maybe request and or you know, like for certain things to be accommodated for. So I think maybe it depends on how many people from that background are in that country. What do you
But what
think?
if you come from a community where there's not that many of you? So in terms of proportion, it will never amount to much.
Good question. I don't know how maybe you can have I'm not sure. I'm not sure how can you work around that, because you can have a framework that, you know, that is a general framework that is built to accommodate to any kind of diversity or like, you know, a certain backgrounds that you could try to work through whenever you have like a small population in the country. But I don't know how that would work, or the how that would look like. So I don't know. I think if you're coming from such a minority,
Like,
maybe you
and I
need to
say this
be
because of
able
things like
to,
the World Cup. Yeah, isn't it going to
yeah.
be in Saudi, or there's going to be some football tournament? Is it the World Cup?
I
Whatever
think
football tournament in it.
the World Cup in Saudi, I want to say 2030, maybe, or something around that. So
There's a
yeah, in a
major
couple of
football
years'
tournament
time.
that's supposed to be happening in the Arab in Saudi Arabia, which we all know its cultural significance within Islam. So people are upset because of not being allowed to drink alcohol and things like that in Saudi Arabia. Now, this is a significant amount of people who will be attending. Should they change their laws to accommodate the World Cup? Or should it just be, you know, this is Saudi, we're holding the
I mean,
tournament, we're doing it our
yeah.
way?
Look, for me,
Because
these people are coming as tourists, so they're not coming to live in Saudi. So I don't
okay.
think it is fair for Saudi to change their overall laws to accommodate
Exactly.
for them. However,
Exactly.
for Saudi to host this event, I think they should have been more flexible, or like they need to be maybe more flexible to accommodate for people who want to attend the World Cup, knowing what the World Cup is and what, you know, like the population that would come to accommodate for the World Cup. So I'm not saying either of the sides are right, and I don't know how it's gonna play out, but I'm just saying that there need to be reasonable expectations from both sides, you know what I mean?
Okay. I don't know how I feel about it, to be honest.
Yeah.
Maybe because it's football and I don't really care.
I mean, I'm not the biggest enthusiast either, so I'm not following the deets of it. But I mean, look, it was the same issue when it was going to be hosted in Qatar, which was the last World Cup, wasn't it? And there was a
You know
lot of
what? We're
controversy.
really
And
showing our sort of football knowledge here. This probably isn't very good. Maybe I meant Qatar.
yes,
Maybe nothing is happening in Saudi. Please forgive
no,
us if
Saudi
we.
will host in the future, but Qatar did just
Okay.
host, I think, the last World Cup, or was it the one before? I think it was the last World Cup, and there was a lot of, you know, controversial opinions shared in that World Cup, and there was a lot of racism, explicit racism, you know, that was exhibited in that World Cup. So yeah, that's a whole separate thing, I think.
People do automatically adapt. So, you know, for those lovers of R&B, Usher has been performing recently. He's on a tour. So there's a segment in his tour where he goes and feeds the audience cherries. It gets a little bit much, to be honest. I actually went to a concert and witnessed this in person. It's a lot. So he's done this at all his shows in London. I think he also did it in Paris, etc. Then he went to Dubai. The man did not pull out any cherries in Dubai because he did not want that smoke that would come. So I think people self-regulate.
I think that's a good example of being reasonable and being, you know, of and being aware maybe of where you are and trying to accommodate. So to bring it back to our topic, and what is a good immigrant, what is a bad immigrant, and how can we define that? I don't think we have a clear definition for that. I mean, we're not here to give a definition. I think we'll leave it to you guys to decide who is a good immigrant, who is a bad immigrant. And
If you are an immigrant, what have you done to sort of be a good one?
No, maybe like tell us how what you do, what you feel like you do to change within yourself to feel like, oh, this will make me a good immigrant, or this is how I can maybe integrate better. You know, do you feel like you're like actively being conscious about what you're doing and who you are, so you can make sure you're always coming across as the good immigrant.
I think sometimes you can change yourself and try all of these things and it will still never be enough for people.
And if you believe that the asylum seekers are the bad immigrants that are coming to take the jobs, and you know they are the root of all issues of the economy, you know, if you know that, you know, asylum seekers are only 0.6% of the population as of 2022, and they're only 7% of immigration in general in 2023, and the rest are usually skilled immigrants, would that change your mind? It's such a tiny population, and these numbers are from the Migration Observatory from the University of Oxford. So it's such a small number of people. However, they are so, like, it's the rhetoric in media and politics that we keep talking about asylum seekers.
Yeah. You people know? Will tell you, though, that this is a small island and we're full. There's no
we're
space.
Full. So, yeah, do you believe this island is a small island and we're already at capacity?
Nah, there's plenty of space.
Yeah. Do we just need want skilled immigrant to come to this country? Do we not want the asylum seekers? Who is a good immigrant? Who is a bad immigrant? You let us know.
Let us know indeed.
Let us know. Thank you for listening. Bye bye.